This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I'm Alex Smith, and I'm looking forward to talking with our next guest, Rochelle Becker. She's been a battler, a citizen activist against nuclear power, for the environment, for mothers and for abused children, for the living against deadly technology. She was just in the New York Times last week, now that Japanese reactors are threatening that country. Rochelle is the executive director of the California Group Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. Rochelle, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thank you, Alex. It's nice to be here.
Out of 100 doddering and dangerous American reactors, we're looking into the Diablo Canyon plant near San Luis Obispo. Just to orient us, where is that on the California coast?
Well, San Luis Obispo is a charming little community. Actually, it was voted best place to live in the world not too long ago, but I'm not sure they would still say so. And it's located about 90 miles north of Santa Barbara, about, oh, let's say 150 miles north of Los Angeles.
And before we go into real details, why should we care at all whether the reactors at Diablo Canyon keep operating?
Well, the Diablo Canyon reactors are located within 3 miles of two active earthquake faults. And they're located within 5 kilometers of 4 faults, but two are offshore major faults. And according to the California Energy Commission and the state legislature, California needs the utilities to do new seismic studies before they can continue with operation. And that was a decision that was made by the California Energy Commission long before the seismic tragedy happened in Japan.
So we have two reactors run by the private utility company PG&E. Looking at the pictures of the site, I don't see cooling towers. How are these reactors cooled?
Well, they are cooled by a process known as once-through cooling. The water goes in, it cools the reactor, and goes back out again. And it goes in and out at a million gallons a minute every single day.
And as you know, right now in Japan, radioactivity is leaking into the sea, possibly through long cooling pipes leading into the ocean at the Fukushima Daiichi plant. Is it possible that could happen after an earthquake at Diablo Canyon?
Well, it would be somewhat different, but the possibilities are the same. These are radioactive waste facilities. They store the radioactive waste on site as well as produce power. The radioactive waste is stored in what they call a spent fuel pool configuration, which is overcrowded. The original design has had to be packed tighter and tighter as the industry has not been able to find a place in the United States to store this waste that's produced at every reactor. While the reactors have 6-foot-thick steel-reinforced concrete, the waste facility, the big problem in Japan right now is the spent fuel pools, and the spent fuel pools at Diablo Canyon and at San Onofre South in California, neither one have the robust buildings that they do for the reactor sites themselves.
So are they protected against, for example, terrorism?
They certainly are not protected against a plane flying into those facilities. They were never built to withstand that, and so they've compensated with other factors. But, you know, if a plane wanted to fly in, they're right there on the ocean bluffs. If a ship went by with some sort of a device, I don't know much about weapons, thank heavens, but it certainly is vulnerable to terrorism. Both the plants are, and the Diablo Canyon plant sits just north of the Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is our communications center for the United States for many things, including the military operations. And the San Onofre plant sits on the Marine base, which is the staging ground for most of the Marines that go to defend our country. Whether you like them to defend our country or not, we certainly don't want to see them killed by a radioactive accident in our own state.
Right. So let's talk about the earthquake risk. And that's been a hot topic there for several decades. Can you tell us more about these fault lines near the Diablo Canyon reactors and maybe when they were discovered?
Yes, the original design for Diablo Canyon, when they originally got a state certification, there were no known earthquake faults within almost 50 miles. The closest fault was the San Andreas fault, which is a rather famous fault, but it was certainly not close to the plant. During construction of the plant, actually when it was almost completely built, an organization found a memo from actually the Shell Oil Company that said, wait a minute, there's an earthquake fault that's active 2.5 miles from the gate of that plant. And we took that information immediately to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and said, wait a minute, you've just missed this. You might want to reconsider this plant before you go forward. And the NRC said, no, you know, we don't think that's a problem. PG&E said, no, it's not a problem. It's a dormant fault. You don't need to worry about it. Many millions, actually billions of dollars later, the NRC finally admitted that, yes, that fault is an earthquake fault that could impact the licensing of the plant. And, yes, that plant now needs to be redesigned to compensate for the earthquake fault that they didn't know about when they built the plant. And that process started, and PG&E was supposed to independently verify that they had done the work that the NRC had asked them to do. And PG&E got caught with their consultant sending their information to the utility before they sent it to the NRC. And the NRC, PG&E was the first plant in the country to have its license that had just been granted by the NRC revoked by the NRC. So there are serious seismic problems at Diablo Canyon. When PG&E applied for a license renewal to extend their license for an additional 20 years late in 2009, the Alliance flew back and met with the chairman of the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and said, you know, your seismic history at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is full of controversy, and no one in the state of California trusts the NRC to do the right thing. And we are asking you to stay this license renewal, to work with the state of California's seismologists who are asking for these new seismic studies, and the NRC denied that stay.
And there are people, right from state senators down through local councilors, who are objecting to this plant, who don't want it to keep going. It's really an old facility. They started in 1968 building this thing. And yet, that just doesn't seem to go anywhere. What does that say about the way nuclear plants are regulated?
What it says was the states need to step up and to protect their citizens. The states have absolutely no authority over security and safety at nuclear power plants. However, the states have full authority over the economics and the reliability of these facilities. And so we formed the alliance in 2005 after I had spent almost 30 years fighting the Nuclear Regulatory Commission with an organization called the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. And when they put in the dry cask storage facility to store the excess waste that they couldn't fit in their pools any longer and denied the contention of looking into new seismic information, and this was in 2001 to 2003. And when they said, no, we're not going to look at the new seismic information you brought forth. If you want to talk about that, you have to open the original licensing proceedings from the late 1970s. And at that point, it became abundantly clear to me that the NRC was never going to do its job when it came to nuclear power plants and earthquake faults. And it was time for the state to step up. And so the alliance was formed in 2005, and our focus is to get the state to step up to the plate, to use its jurisdiction to look carefully at whether or not the state can rely on these aging reactors and whether or not it's in their economic best interest to go forward. And in doing that, the alliance has worked with the California Energy Commission and the California Legislature and the California Coastal Commission, and they have requested and done new seismic analysis or new analysis of the cost, benefit, and risks of continuing to rely on these aging reactors. And their bottom line was, we don't have enough seismic information, and you, PG&E, and you, Southern California Edison, have to do updated seismic studies using the best available technology right now and let us know whether or not we should even consider relicensing these reactors. Both utilities have dragged their feet, and they've dragged their feet up until Japan, and they're still dragging their feet.
So they just don't even want to look into whether the fact an earthquake could damage their plant. Is that what we're saying?
If they look, they might find.
This is Radio EcoShock as we peer into the Valley of the Devil, so to speak, the Diablo Canyon nuclear generating plant right on the California coast. Rochelle Becker is the executive director for the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. Rochelle, starting in the late 1970s, tens of thousands of Californians fought against this Diablo Canyon facility, mainly fearing the earthquake risk. 30,000 people marched in San Francisco alone one day. Tell us a little bit about that time.
Yes, California was united at that time. This was in the early 1980s. In fact, we even organized a sit-in at the Public Utilities Commission at the time, asking them to rescind the certificate they had given them because now we knew about a new earthquake fault. California was very united. They were sure, after Three Mile Island, after the discovery of earthquake faults, that the NRC would do its job and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission would deny PG&E this license. We never anticipated that the NRC would just turn their backs and say, oh, no, we trust these people to do the right thing. And they not only did that, but in the mid-1980s, they ruled that our emergency planners did not need to consider an earthquake happening that could cause a radioactive release at the Diablo Canyon facility and knock out the infrastructure that we would need in order to evacuate. They said it was too remote and speculative. Well, Japan has just proven that it's neither remote nor speculative, and the NRC needs to go back to the table. But I don't trust them to go back to the table and do the right thing. I think we could spend a lot of years and a lot of monies, and the only winners would be the utilities and the attorneys that will take these cases to go on forever. California can step up to the plate. Other states can step up to the plate. And we are hoping that California leads the way. The New York governor has says close down Indian Point. There's 20 million people or more within 50 miles of Indian Point, and they have earthquake faults. There are 11 million people within 50 miles of the San Onofre nuclear power plant, and they have earthquake faults, and they're subject to tsunamis. These are plants that were designed in the 1960s. How many of us are driving 1960 cars? And even if there's something bad coming out of our tailpipes that are contributing to CO2 emissions, it isn't radioactive, and it won't kill you today.
How are we going to get young people interested in protecting their land from one of these Japanese-style nuclear disasters right at home?
Well, you know, that's a bit difficult because there haven't been any new reactors that have actually been built. We've talked about them, but they haven't actually come to town anywhere in the United States. And the young people are very, very concerned about global climate change and what will happen in the CO2 from the global climate change and the pollution. So rightly so, they have been indoctrinated by the administration, both Republicans and Democrats. They've been indoctrinated by scientists who are saying, oh, no, 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 we have got to clean up our air. And I couldn't agree more. But you don't trade one poison for another poison. You look for positive solutions, and the nuclear industry doesn't have any positive solutions. They say these new reactors are better built. These new reactors won't happen what happens in Japan, and that's absolutely true. As long as they stay on the drawing board, those new reactors are just fine.
You've been fighting this cause for about 3 decades, and I'm sure I've missed some important issue. Is there something else you'd like to talk about?
I think that what I would really like to stress with your audience is that while the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is no different than the Nuclear Safety Commission in Japan, who 2 weeks ago would have said this can't happen here and would have said these plants are built to withstand anything that's coming, what happens is you have to imagine the unimaginable. The results of the 9/11 Commission after the terrible terrorist attack in New York was that the United States failed to imagine the unimaginable. Japan has just proven that we continue to fail to imagine the unimaginable, but that it happens. And we no longer are going to get too many more warnings. Japan happened this month, but it makes no difference because California could happen next month or any of the other 23 reactors in the United States that are built just like the ones in Japan.
And as we wrap up, can you give us the web address for the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility and any other resources you'd like to recommend?
Absolutely. The Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility is www.anr.org. If you do anr.org, you will get a Japanese site, which is rather coincidental at the moment. So it's anr.org. Now, there's also other information nationwide that would be Beyond Nuclear. The Union of Concerned Scientists has excellent information, and they have a daily blog updating with technical information. They couldn't be a better site. And if you want to talk to the Mothers for Peace, who continue to have legal interventions at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and still believe, you know, that the right people can change, that would be Mothers for Peace, San Luis Obispo mothersforpeace.org. All of those sites are excellent sites for information and also to find out what you can do. We have 2 action letters on our website that go to the Public Utilities Commission in California and to the governor in California. And I really hope that your listening audience, no matter where they are, will send in that action letter and assert the state's rights, because that's the only thing that's going to kill these nuclear plants.
Our guest, Rochelle Becker, has spoken out at public utility meetings, regulatory meetings, and just too many rooms full of suits, trying to make a state safe from nuclear radiation. She's been the conscience riding the nuclear industry and a welcome guest here on Radio EcoShock. Thank you so much, Rochelle.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website, We're at ecoshock.org.
To talk about the ongoing problems at the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Generation Station, we are joined by Stephen Wiseman, a lecturer in residence at the University of California, Berkeley. He's also director of the Energy and Clean Tech Program there. Previously, Stephen was an administrative law judge for the California Public Utilities Commission. Stephen, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
About a week after the Japanese earthquake brought the nuclear disaster to Japan, you wrote an article titled Multiple Failures Exposed Diablo Canyon to Higher Risk. First of all, I just wanted to ask you, why did you choose to write about Diablo Canyon?
Well, for several reasons. Before I was an administrative law judge, I spent about 3 years as part of a team that was investigating the activities surrounding the original construction of the Diablo Canyon plant. And came to learn a lot about the utilities management structure, its decision-making processes, and the extent to which there were and were not protections put in place to ensure that the plant was designed well from the outset. When I saw the study produced by the Union of Concerned Scientists that pointed out the Diablo Canyon near miss, as they characterized it, which was one of what they said were about 14 near misses that occurred in 2010, I could see patterns that looked familiar from my past review of the Diablo Canyon plant, so I wanted to bring some of those issues to people's attention.
And what did the Union of Concerned Scientists say about this facility?
What they pointed out was that there were some valves designed in activating the emergency cooling system that were stuck in the off position for about 18 months. And during that period of time, apparently nobody at the plant nor any of the regulators knew that the valve was actually stuck.
So if they'd had an accident, perhaps their backup systems wouldn't have worked?
That's the concern. The utility said, well, we always had the option of manually activating the valves. And apparently, according to a quote in the San Francisco Chronicle, they also said, of course, the chances of this kind of accident occurring were really small anyway. Well, what seems to be missing from those comments is an understanding of the importance in a nuclear power plant of having well-functioning backup systems, because it isn't the initial problem so much that tends to cripple plants such as the ones at Fukushima. It's really the inability of the backup systems to function properly that winds up turning a potential blip into a real problem.
Well, there are a chain of regulators that are supposed to protect us, the public. We've got the Independent Safety Committee and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Did those oversight bodies work to protect us?
I certainly can't really second guess how much work and how diligently, for instance, the NRC staff tried to do their job and ferret out problems. From reports I've seen, apparently there's something like 6,400 hours of staff time a year devoted to each nuclear power plant, which means there were the equivalent of more than 3 full-time people spending time looking, for instance, at Diablo Canyon. And the question is, how do they go about doing their work? This is actually a problem that's cropped up in California recently in another sphere, which was the accident that occurred on a natural gas pipeline in San Bruno that wound up exploding and killing and injuring a number of people. And the question was, how could the California Public Utilities Commission, with I think a staff of about 15 inspectors, possibly keep on top of what's going on in several thousand miles of pipeline in the state? And the answer really has to do, I think, with the systems that are set up and the questions that are asked and the proofs that are required from the facility operators, and certainly with 6,400 hours of staff time a year at one nuclear power plant. First of all, you have the ability to have somebody on site at all times, but you certainly have the ability to always take a step backwards and look at the framework, look at the systems that are set up by the utility, by the operator of the plant, to create a fail-safe and to be able to ensure that if there's some mistake that occurs anywhere in the design or operation of the facility, that's going to be caught quickly. With that kind of staff oversight, it's hard to imagine how you would be unable to catch those things at an earlier time. And unfortunately, in this instance, the NRC did not catch this for quite some period of time.
And you live in the San Francisco area?
Yeah.
Well, the Diablo Canyon nuke plant appears to be about 200 miles or 318 kilometers south of San Francisco. And in April 1979, 30,000 people marched at a protest in Frisco calling for a shutdown at Diablo. Are you aware of any studies showing how a meltdown there could affect San Francisco, or is there just a general public awareness of possible danger?
I'm not familiar with any particular study. I'm sure that people looked at this issue over the years. But I think what we've seen in Fukushima really gives us all a lesson about the way these things can be affecting a much broader area. You know, the debate at Fukushima has been, do you evacuate a 15 to 19 mile radius area as the Japanese authorities have required, or do you evacuate a 50 mile radius area as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the United States has advised them? Well, either way you look at that, you're still well short of the San Francisco Bay Area. What you do know is that you have winds that prevail off of the ocean, carrying things inland. The facilities that are located on the ocean, the right wind patterns can certainly carry radiation into populated areas. You also know that there are other kinds of effects that have wound up having broader implications. The contamination of, for instance, water in Tokyo, which was not very close to the Fukushima accident. The fact that certain crops are showing signs of containing of radiation from the event at Fukushima, those things wind up having a much wider impact. And so to take an area like San Francisco, is there a plausible scenario under which there could be direct catastrophic physical impacts in the San Francisco area? You know, I'm not an authority on that. You'd have to really talk to people who've studied these things. But certainly, well short of that, it's easy to imagine scenario having a very significant economic impact on the San Francisco area, both in terms of agriculture, but also in terms of tourism, perceptions of safety. Can you imagine a lot of people at this point saying, "Hey, what the heck? Let's go visit Tokyo now." I think you could imagine where there are going to be at least short or medium range economic impacts that could be significant on a region.
Well, sure. The agriculture industry is just huge. And, you know, if there was even a hint that there was nuclear particles on California vegetables, I just can't imagine the kind of unemployment and the economic hit the state would take. And despite the moratorium on new nuclear plants in California, a business group is trying to push construction of the state's largest facility in the interior at Fresno. But it sounds like they are trying to call it a water treatment plant with a solar facility. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, I haven't looked in great detail at the proposed Fresno facility. I think it's unlikely to go anywhere in the foreseeable future because of the fact that there is this very explicit moratorium in place, and it's up to the California Energy Commission to make a determination as to whether, in fact, the long-term storage capabilities exist that would support building a new plant now. And you remember, there are actually two parts of moratorium. One is one has to do with this question of whether there is in place a permanent storage capability for high-level nuclear waste, which, of course, we don't have in this country right now. But the other portion had to do with these issues of on-site storage, the use of storage pools such as exist at Diablo Canyon, at San Onofre, further south along the coast, and certainly turned out to be perhaps the most significant issue at the Fukushima plants. It was the fact that you've got the spent nuclear fuel rods in a pool of liquid, and that liquid is so critical to keeping the fuel rods cool and to holding down the radiation releases. When the tsunami wound up affecting the systems, and which led to a loss of who knows how much of the water that was in these pools, that's where you seem to have had one of the largest threats to overheating and potential explosions and meltdowns. So they got that issue lingering out there, too, and there's nothing about what happened at Fukushima to provide assurance that we've solved those problems as well. So I think that a new facility in Fresno or elsewhere is going to have a huge mountain to climb to overcome that moratorium. And you have to think that perhaps this is more being offered more as a morality play in an effort to try to convince people to change the law and remove the moratorium than it is an effort to actually get a plant cited under the current laws.
Steve, you're also working on energy and clean tech. Briefly, how is California doing when it comes to bringing on clean sources so we could replace those risky nuclear plants?
California is doing a lot better than a lot of other places. It's not doing as well as it had hoped. There was a goal established by legislation a number of years ago that the utilities in California receive 20% of their delivered power from renewable sources, and that the deadline for that was the end of 2010. We're into 2011 now, and none of the three major utilities has hit those targets, but they're significantly going down the road toward getting there. They're in the teens in terms of the percentage of power that's delivered from renewable sources. And those goals were really more aspirational than scientifically derived. So the targets have been effective in terms of spurring the utilities and the regulators into action. We now have more ambitious goals that are likely to be signed into law very, very shortly that would have us aiming for 33% renewable energy by the year 2020. These are more ambitious goals than exist most anywhere else in the country, not only because of the percentage of power that's supposed to be renewable, but also because of the way renewable power is defined. When President Obama in the State of the Union address didn't even talk about renewable power, he talked about what he referred to as clean energy, and he talked about the fact that right now you could conclude that 40% of the power nationwide is provided by clean energy sources. Well, in order to get that at 40%, not only is he counting things like nuclear power, but he's also counting large hydro facilities, the kind of dams that provide a significant percentage of the power in California. Well, California, when it established its renewable goals, elected not to count large-scale hydro plants. So the targets that are set in California are more pure targets. A lot of other states are counting large-scale hydros. So California is doing pretty darn well compared to other states.
Mind you, when we talk about costs, the nuclear critics have been worrying for years that a future society might not have the money or the resources to decommission these nuclear plants, even if we do decide to shut them down. Given the state of California is fighting off bankruptcy, the federal government has record debt. I wonder if we're already there. Can anybody afford to clean up this mess if we did stop the relicensing of Diablo Canyon?
This is one area where the state demonstrated foresight from the outset. When Diablo Canyon was placed into rates, it established a decommissioning trust fund, and there's been a portion of utility rates since the 80s that has gone into this trust fund, and that set-aside still exists. The biggest challenges really relate to the success and failure of the trustees in terms of managing those funds, and also in our inability to very accurately anticipate exactly what it's going to cost to decommission these plants. So there are still some risks even in California as to whether there will be enough money set aside for decommissioning, but at least there is a very significant set aside.
I'm surprised to hear that. Well, this is an ongoing issue. I appreciate your input. We've been talking with environmental lawyer Stephen Weissman. He lectures at the University of California, Berkeley. He works on clean tech and writes about energy, including nuclear power. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
After the 9.0, you think we've learned, no nukes no more.
You are listening to California artist Vastman. Find him at SoundClick.
Or we'll get burned. The planet's been speaking.